is Madhya Lila, Chapter 22, called The Process of Devotional Service. And we're reading text 10. Sevi vibinam sujiva duitara prakar eka nitya mukta eka nitya samsar. Translation. Living entities, jivas, are divided into two categories. Some are eternally liberated, and others are eternally conditioned. Text 11. Nitya mukta nitya krishna charane unmuk krishna parishad nam punje seva sukha. Translation. Those who are eternally liberated are always awake to Krishna consciousness, and they render transcendental loving service at the feet of Lord Krishna. They are to be considered eternal associates of Krishna, and they are eternally enjoying the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. Text 12. Nitya-bandha Krishna-haite nitya-bahi-muk nitya-samsar-bunje-narakari-duk. Translation. Apart from the ever-liberated devotees, there are the conditioned souls who always turn away from the service of the Lord. They are perpetually conditioned in this material world and are subjected to the material tribulations brought about by different bodily forms in hellish conditions. Text 13. Se doshe maya pisachi danda karitar adyatmikari tapatraya tare jarimar. Translation. Due to his being opposed to Krishna consciousness, the conditioned soul is punished by the witch of the external energy, Maya. He is thus ready to suffer the threefold miseries, miseries brought about by the body and mind, the inimical behavior of other living entities, and natural disturbances caused by the demigods. Texts 14 and 15. Kama krodera dasehana taralati kaya brahmati brahmati adi sadhu vadya pai. And then 15. Tanra upadesha matre pisache palai Krishna bhakti paya tabe Krishna nitatavyai. Kama of lusty desires, krodhera and of anger, das the servant, hana becoming, tara by them. Latikai is kicked. Brahmeti, brahmeti, wandering and wandering. Yadi, if. Sadhu, a devotee. Vaidya, physician. Paya, he gets. Tamra, his. Upadesha mantra, by instruction and hymns. Pisachi, the witch, the external energy. Palai, flees. Krishna bhakti, devotional service to Krishna. Pai, obtains. Tabe, in this way. Krishna nikata, yai, he goes to Krishna. Translation. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires. And when these are not fulfilled, he becomes the servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy, Maya. wandering and wandering throughout the universe, he may by chance get the association of a devotee physician, whose instructions and hymns make the witch of the external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with devotional service to Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. An explanation of verses 8 through 15 is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya. The Lord is spread throughout the creation in His quadruple expansions and incarnations. Krishna is fully represented with all potencies in each and every personal extension. But the living entities, although separated expansions, are also considered one of the Lord's energies. The living entities are divided into two categories, the eternally liberated and the eternally conditioned. Those who are ever liberated never come in contact with Maya, the external energy. The ever conditioned souls are always under the clutches of the external energy. This is described by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Devi yesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. The nitya buddhas are always conditioned by the external energy, and the nitya muktas never come in contact with the external energy. Sometimes an ever-liberated personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends into this universe just as the Lord descends. Although working for the liberation of conditioned souls, the messenger of the Supreme Lord remains untouched by the material energy. Generally, ever-liberated personalities live in the spiritual world as associates of Lord Krishna, and they are known as Krishna Parishad, associates of the Lord. Their only business is enjoying Lord Krishna's company. And even though such eternally liberated persons come within this material world to serve the Lord's purpose, they enjoy Lord Krishna's company without stoppage. The ever-liberated persons who work on Krishna's behalf enjoy Lord Krishna's company through his engagements. The ever-conditioned soul, provoked by lusty desires to enjoy the material world, is forced to transmigrate from one body to another. Sometimes he is elevated to higher planetary systems, and sometimes he is degraded to hellish planets and subjected to the tribulations of the external energy. Due to being conditioned by the external energy, the conditioned soul within this material world gets two kinds of bodies, a gross material body and a subtle material body composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. Due to the gross and subtle bodies, he is subjected to the threefold miseries, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, and adhidevika miseries, arising from the body and mind, other living entities, and natural disturbances caused by demigods from higher planetary systems. The conditioned soul subjected to the threefold material miseries is ceaselessly kicked by Maya, and this is his disease. If by chance he meets a saintly person who works on Krishna's behalf to deliver conditioned souls, and if he agrees to abide by his order, he can gradually approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Om Ajnata Marandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Kansha Kalpa Tiri Vischa Kripa Sindhu Veva Cha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavyo Namaha. So I'll read this verse, or these two verses once again. The conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires, and when these are not fulfilled, he becomes the servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy, Maya. Wandering and wandering throughout the universes, he may by chance get the association of a devotee physician, whose instructions and hymns make the witch of the external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with devotional service to Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. So our acharyas have described that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has unlimited energies, and they can be divided for our understanding into three general categories. There is the internal energy, meaning the Lord himself and his expansions, his incarnations, his abode. There is the external energy, which can be divided. It is divided in Bhagavad Gita into eight different parts: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And it's also divided into Bhagavad Gita into more parts. Later on in the 13th chapter, it's described 24 divisions of this external energy of the Lord. It includes the working senses, the knowledge-acquiring senses, desire, so forth. So those are two of the energies, and the third one is called marginal, tatastha shakti, marginal energy. And that is the living entities, us, the atman, or the jivas. Because it's described, if you can picture a beach, at high tide that beach, which is the junction between the water and the land, at high tide that beach is covered with water, and at low tide that water recedes, so the sand is there. The children can play in the sand and make castles. So marginal energy means that sometimes, although we are actually part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, qualitatively equal to him, we're Satchidananda Vigraha, but quantitatively we're minuscule, and the Lord is infinite. So we're called marginal because we are so small, sometimes we can be covered by the external energy, just like the beach is covered by the water. And sometimes, as it's said here, by chance, in the words of this verse, we come in contact with a pure devotee, one who's a resident of the land, in this analogy, who is never touched by the water. And by his grace, we can become extricated from the waves of the ocean, which are constantly tossing us, helplessly, as it were. The ocean tosses and tosses the living entity in it. So this is the great option of the human form of life. In the other species of life, besides human, they don't have the intelligence to understand this opportunity. We notice that there are no animals present who can hear from Chaitanya Charitamrita, no bugs, no birds. It is this very rare human form that we have this God-gifted intelligence by which we can understand our position. We can hear from the scriptures and take this message to heart. And as we come in contact with the devotee, with the pure devotee, the representative of the Lord, who has no ulterior motives, then we gather faith in his message. And we can head for the dry land and stop being overwhelmed by these lusty desires that lead to anger. So it's a science, and it begins, the whole science begins with this shraddha, faith. That if someone comes and they hear, even from the pure devotee, but they don't have this quality of shraddha, this quality of faith, that yes, maybe this relates to me, that yes, maybe this knowledge will improve my existence, that yes, maybe I am suffering in this material world. If they lack the single quality of faith, then they will miss the opportunity to get out of the tribulations of this world. So this quality of faith is of the utmost importance. Perhaps we can say, in the conditioned soul, in the human form, this is something, one of the most valuable things we have. that we have to protect this. We understand there are mad elephants that can come and crush this faith, which begins in a small way, and by the process of devotional service, by hearing and chanting, by following the instructions of the spiritual master, by serving, this faith grows in strength. The roots reach deep and are nourished by the association of the devotees, by the process of bhakti yoga, simply by following daily, despite everything else that is happening in our lives, despite what our minds might be telling us, despite the tribulations that are attacking our bodies and the bodies of those that we know. We go on with these basic principles, and the faith will grow, undoubtedly, especially avoiding offenses to the Vaishnavas. This is the fence that will protect this tiny creeper and allow it to become stronger and stronger as the days and the years pass. And especially also, if we find something that's suitable to our particular psychophysical condition, some service that's especially pleasurable to us, one could say that we can do in Krishna's service, then this will also help us grow in faith and grow in the process of bhakti yoga. Therefore, Prabhupada made so many engagements, even within the temple. There's so many varieties of engagements that one can do. And then one passes one time feeling very happy because this is appropriate to oneself, this particular engagement. And as we encourage each other with our different services, then again, we feel strength in this process and come closer, nearer and nearer to the Lord, as Prabhupada writes here in the verse. So one of the great questions that arises and has arisen for centuries is brought up in this verse, and that is the question of, if God is all good, then why is there evil in the world? Religionists and theosophists have been puzzled by this, and I had a very interesting experience personally in relation to this question. Prabhupada was traveling from Philadelphia to Berkeley in 1975, July. He was going to the Rathiatra, from the Rathiatra in Philadelphia to the Rathiatra in Berkeley. And for some reason I never found out, there were very few passengers on this airplane. It was almost empty. And during the flight, the captain of the airplane came out of the cockpit and he sat next to Srila Prabhupada. And they had a very animated discussion that Prabhupada thoroughly enjoyed. And of course the plane is very noisy. I was actually filming that. I had a film camera. I was filming it. And I was very curious what they were discussing because it was so animated that I couldn't hear. And I didn't want to go up to Prabhupada and say, excuse me, what were you talking about? So I resigned myself that I would never know. But when Prabhupada arrived in Berkeley, during his arrival address, he talked about this discussion. And he said the captain was a very intelligent person. And he asked Prabhupada this question. He said, if God is all good, God is the source of everything, then how is it that there's evil? And Prabhupada gave him an analogy. He said, actually for God there is no evil. He said, just like if there's something wrong with my chest, I take care of that. And if there's something wrong with my back, I take care of that also. It's not that I say, oh, it's on my back, never mind. No. So he said, religion or goodness is like the chest of God, and irreligion is like the back of God. And it's both God. And later on, I was reading in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it mentions in the description of the universal form of the Lord, it mentions how religion is the chest of the Lord and irreligion is the back of the Lord. So Prabhupada was saying that in this case, irreligion is like evil. It's the back of the Lord, but it's all part of the Lord. And for the Lord, there's no evil. It's just part of Him. So then the captain accepted that, and he said, so how come we perceive evil? We perceive evil so many times. Babies are born deformed, and there are tsunamis that kill people, and we have, you know, it's endless, the evils that we ever seen. People are running in a marathon and they get blown up and killed. So Prabhupada said, he gave another analogy. He said, just like on the surface of the sun, there's no shadow. And if you're facing the sun, there's no shadow. And once we turn our back on the sun, then we see this long shadow. So in the same way, once we turn away from God, then we perceive this, what we call evil. But actually, for one who is fully God conscious, they understand that everything is operating by the supreme will of Krishna. And if it's the supreme will of Krishna, and Krishna is all good, then actually there is no evil in that sense. Evil is due to the result of our turning away from Krishna. So it's in this conversation, which was relatively short, Prabhupada very clearly explained this question that has puzzled religionists for centuries now. Just that was his brilliance and his clarity, his genius, coming, of course, from the scriptures. So the captain also accepted that, and he felt it was very satisfying and beautiful, and he actually took one of Srila Prabhupada's books right there on the plane. So this question came up over and over again. I was recently watching a YouTube video where Shiva Ramaswamy debated an atheist. And this poor atheist, over and over, he was saying, how can there be God? Because there's so much calamity in the world. How can you believe in a God who's all good when you look all around you and see endless suffering, endless miseries, endless problems, and very often the people involved are innocent. And Shiva Ramaswamy explained the principle of karma to him. And but we can see he did not accept this. People don't want to accept responsibility for their actions, and thus the miseries continue, unabated. We were learning from our Bhakti Vaibhava course just a few days ago, given by Yadunandana Swami, that these four principles of austerity, truthfulness, mercifulness, compassion, austerity, cleanliness, truthfulness, mercifulness. These four principles, they're regularly defied in this age of Kali. Through the four principles, the four vows that we take not to do at the time of initiation, no eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. Because these are defied openly during this age of Kali, therefore, naturally, there'll be so much suffering, endless suffering. Just if you look at the amount of meat eating that goes on, now throughout the world, even in India, it's becoming prominent. For killing those innocent animals, in the Bhakti Vaibhava course, that was related to pride. And we have so much pride, we think we're better than the animals, therefore we can kill them, which destroys austerity. That in itself creates huge suffering for people. No wonder the tsunamis, no wonder there are constant wars and civil unrest and people dying on the streets from violence and from car accidents and endless things. And then if you go on with the illicit sex and all that entails, since I have an interest in films, sometimes I keep track of the films that are being produced. And invariably, they're about illicit sex, the whole plot. About. And I always invariably think if they would just follow this one regulative principle, they could start making films that perhaps are interesting. But no, they're very much caught up in this. And the same with books and literature. And naturally, it provokes more illicit sex, more sinful life. So to take shelter of this movement in this age is really a bold act. Because the society is just pervaded by these sinful activities that it's taken as normal. It's taken as progressive for a woman to be able to have an abortion, to kill her unborn child. And people that don't accept that, well, they're very conservative. They're not allowing murder. So it's very topsy-turvy. It's actually insanity what's going on. And we are blessed unbelievably to have Prabhupada's instructions to take shelter of, to have his example to follow, and to have these beautiful scriptures to read and relish together. So for us to never take this in a complacent way, take it for granted, we can do that in each other's association and approach nearer and nearer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This clock here says 7:40. The little clock in front of me. Perhaps if there's some discussions on this point, or these points, anyone has any thoughts about them?
I was just wondering, in the verse it says that how anger is a result of lust. And I was thinking sometimes somebody does something stupid and you just get angry. So I wonder if all anger is related to lust.
No, I don't say all anger is due to lust. There's also transcendental anger. So that's certainly not due to lust. But this is referring, especially it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, that by contemplating the objects of the senses, one acquires attachment for them. From that attachment, lust develops from lust. Because it's very often, this is the case, that we see something, and because we think we're the enjoyers, we forget that we're actually to be enjoyed. But we think we're the enjoyers, so we want that thing. And when we don't get it, then we say, well, why don't I have it? It belongs, you know, it's mine. Be for me, and that gives rise to anger, and then it goes on, and one again falls into the material pool as a result, becomes bewildered, overwhelmed. So it's very often, but he wouldn't say always, it's a result of lust, anger.
You mentioned this at the Prabhupada said that the evil is Krishna's backside and the front is Krishna's, the good is Krishna's front side. And if we turn away from Krishna, we see shadows. I wouldn't understand that if we see the evil, then Krishna will turn away from us.
Say it again.
If we see evil, then Krishna will turn away from us, not we turn away from Krishna. Because Krishna, this evil is on Krishna's backside.
No, there's two analogies here. The second analogy is compared to the sun. And if we're facing the sun, there is no shadow. Right? But if we turn our back to the sun, then there's this long shadow that we create. So when we're facing Krishna, either the front side or the back side, there's no difference for Krishna. Then we will see there is no evil. There is only Krishna. It's when we turn away from him that the perception of the misperception, one could say, of evil is there. But for Krishna, and you know, his backside and his front side is all good. There's no difference.
But the shadows, when it's basically, it's like illusion of evil, which is not there. Because shadows are behind Krishna. Evil is
no,
behind
shadow
Krishna.
Is behind us. If you're facing the sun.
Yeah, this I can understand, okay. But I was just thinking, where is the evil actually?
The evil is when we turn our back to Krishna.
The shadows, they are the evil.
Mm. That is the shadow when it comes. There's another story that was very instructive. It's somewhat related to this. The Prabhupada was, this is in Juhu, near Bombay, and Prabhupada was asked a very interesting question by a guest, a young Indian man. He said that if there is a sadhu, I don't know where he got this, but he said, there's a sadhu, and he's chanting, he's pure, he has no ulterior motives. He's chanting on a bank of a river. And he sees someone floating down the river going to drown. And this sadhu can see perfectly that this is the divine arrangement of the Lord. But due to this person's karma, he's there, he can't swim, he's going to... So should that sadhu save that person, or should he just go on chanting, knowing very well that the Lord's plan is being executed? And Prabhupada said he must try to save him. Even with that vision that is the perfect arrangement, if he does not try to save him, no one will understand this sadhu's mentality, and he'll simply get criticized for not trying to save him, and then no one will hear him when he preaches. People will reject him and be unable to hear the knowledge that he gives. So in that way, we have a responsibility, even with this knowledge, to act in a way that people will be attracted to hearing it. It was a very revealing statement, unusual, you could say. But we always want to be conscious that we're representing this knowledge on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. And it is our responsibility to represent it in such a way that people will be able to hear it. And Prabhupada was the perfect example of that because people were so attracted to him. I've been editing interviews that Malati Prabhu did for a book she's working on called A Bond of Love, Srila Prabhupada and His Daughters. So she interviewed 250 or more of Prabhupada's female disciples. So one of them was by Chayadevi. Chayadevi participated in the second Rath Yatra in San Francisco. When Prabhupada was there, and she describes how the Rath cart, there were three Rath carts, they stopped near a bridge because they couldn't lower the canopy. This is just part of the interview, I'm getting to the relevant point. And Prabhupada took the opportunity to stand up and put his arms up and chant, and then the crowd went wild. They were just chanting with such excitement and enthusiasm. So she said she was pulling the ropes of Prabhupada's cart so much that her hands became blistered, but something said she should stop, but she said, no, it's too much fun. So she pulled all the way to the beach. It was a very long procession. And there she partook of the feast that was served to everyone, all the thousands of participants. And then she went to the family dog auditorium where Prabhupada spoke. And she said she was a hippie at that time, and she took drugs as all the other hippies did. So she said, I don't remember much of what he said, but what I do remember is that Prabhupada told us we are not God. And she said, I was so shocked to hear that I was not God. Said, because in this hippie mentality, everyone was thinking that they will merge with the white light and become one with God. And around her, there were murmurs from the audience being very dissatisfied with this message of Prabhupada. They are not God. And she said, you know, I felt so much respect for this person that he was saying something unpopular but true. And although he knew it was unpopular, because it was true, he said it, and he said it with such conviction that it entered her heart to the point that she became a wonderful devotee and is today a wonderful devotee. So my point is that Prabhupada himself exemplified this knowledge and made it attractive for those who was sincere and was unafraid to present it in any circumstance. And who present it without compromise. Yes.
Thank you, regarding your first story with Prabhupada, I remember the Chaitanya Charitamrita Chaitanya said, the matter of what, the ideas of good and bad are just fantastic creation. And so it's very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a famous verse.
Yes.
And again, this analogy for it. Prabhupada gives the analogy that if there's stool in the field, you know, in India they pass stool in the field. So the sun shines and it dries the stool on the top. And the stool may think, yes, very good, I have dry stool, very nice. And then the stool on the bottom, oh, you're on stool, that's good. But it's all stool. It's all stool. You can't say good stool, bad. It's all stool. So similarly in the material world, anything that is separate from Krishna is bad. And what's united with Krishna is good. So in that sense, it's all mental speculation in the material world to say this is good and this is bad. Although in one sense we can say that we must come to the mode of goodness in order to transcend the mode of goodness. But from this point of view, if it's simply the mode of goodness and not coming to the transcendental position, then you just go down to the mode of ignorance sooner or later. So what's the use of being in the mode of goodness? Another analogy, this is a warning for analogies, forgive me, but another analogy is that if you want to fly, say, from Brussels to London, so you go to the airport and you get on the plane bound for London. But if you just go to the airport and you actually don't get on the plane, what's the use of going to the airport? You might as well be anywhere else, you know. So So similarly, the mode of goodness is meant to transcend the modes of nature. But if you just come to the mode of goodness and then recede to passion and ignorance, what's the use? You're just going in a circle like a Ferris wheel, up and down and up and down. So in that way, everything in the material world can be understood to be useless or bad. And what is what unites us with Krishna and devotional service can be understood to be good, even if it's just the beginning stage.
Mentioned about we can advance from our engaging doing service to the psycho-physical state. I've just been wondering, I've heard different things on this, that some devotees say that you can advance more from doing things that you don't actually like doing. And I've also heard that this is just overemphasized sometimes, that really we should just engage in what our psycho-physical state is. So I'm hearing
that it really depends on the individual's advancement. I don't think we can make a general statement. For one who's very advanced, they will do anything and everything for Krishna's service without distinction and relish that. Once we had I lived in Sharanagati. I'm still living in Sharanagati. And for 10 years, Jamuna Devi lived there also. And so we would very often get together and have discussions. And once somehow the topic came up, what is your favorite devotional service? And it went around and we all said different things that we'd like to do. And finally when it came to Jamuna Devi Prabhu, she said, I'd like to do anything that's related to Krishna. So certainly on the highest platform, the devotee doesn't make distinctions. That this is according to my psychophysical nature and this is not that. But for those of us less advanced, if there's an emergency, certainly, even though we may not have a propensity or desire to do something, we will do it. But emergency means there's a beginning and an end. It can't go on indefinitely, because if it does, it may be very much to our detriment. We've seen that in the past. So according to one's advancement, one engages. And for those of us who are neophyte, to engage according to our propensity is very helpful. I know many times if I'm doing something that I am not so inclined towards, I'm very conscious of the time and how much time is passing. But if I'm doing something that I relish, the day is over and what happened? Or, you know. So that's a very good indication when we're doing something that's according to our nature, the time just evaporates. Is that okay? So the question, any more? It's a very good question. Can you repeat it louder? I'm not sure if everybody heard it.
So it's mentioned in the verse that eternally liberated souls are never in contact with the illusory energies, are never conditioned. And as long as we belong to the category of eternally conditioned souls, it means that even if we are liberated, for us it's still a chance or risk to be conditioned again.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the living entity eternally has free will. That's stated in Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna tells Arjuna right at the end, I have instructed this knowledge to you fully, now you do as you wish to do. So all of us at any time can do as we wish to do. The eternally liberated souls never make the mistake of being in contact with this external energy. And for those who are eternally conditioned, once they come out of the conditioning, Prabhupada says, it is not very likely that they'll make that mistake again. But the free will is always there. Always. It's never taken away. It's part of who we are. Just like Lord Krishna is completely independent, he's called Svarat. He can do whatever he likes. So we are tiny, tiny 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. But we also have some degree of independence. And we have, with independence, means we can misuse it. It is always there. But one learns from mistakes. And it would be very foolish to make that mistake again. But nonetheless, foolishness is always our option. Even at this point, sitting under the lotus feet of Shishi Radha Gopinath and Srila Prabhupada, any one of us can be foolish and do something foolish with our lives, with our tongues, with our minds. The option is always there. Therefore, we have this daily process of sadhana, so we can avoid foolishness because it's lurking. It's lurking around us.
Yeah, but those eternal and the liberated souls are never dependent
on Krishna. Who they are actually? Nanda Maharaj, Yasoda, the gopis, the gopas, the cows, the grass, the trees. Those are the eternally liberated souls of whom we take shelter. Can you speak louder?
Yeah. I've heard from my Guru Maharaj, he told his Radha Swami that once we are liberated, when we become Nitya Siddhas, and there is no difference anymore. In the spiritual world, there is no difference anymore. So I guess, I mean, this is how I perceive it. Is there anything maybe to add to that, to understand that there's no more this logic of this division there in the spiritual world? So would you like to add something?
Yeah, Prabhupada explains that there are three ways to attain perfection. That you can do it by sadhana siddha, that's the process of bhakti yoga as we do it, as kripa siddha, and then there's also nitya siddha, right? Completely, always perfect. So the sadhana siddha means that we chant 16 rounds a day, we attend the program, we build our faith and our knowledge, and then by Krishna's grace, by the mercy of Krishna, we attain this perfection. The Kripa Siddha means that, just like Jagai and Madhai, they didn't do any sadhana, but by Lord Nityananda's mercy, they attained perfection. But Prabhupada says there's no difference. Once you attain perfection, there's no difference in the way that you attained it. So that's confirming what Ramanath Swami said. Whether it's Kripa Siddha or Sadhana Siddha, perfection is perfection. So there's just a few minutes left. I could say that there's a very interesting relationship between faith and knowledge. It's stated that one who has implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, then all the imports of the Vedic knowledge are revealed to that person. One who has implicit faith in the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of the Vedic knowledge are revealed. And Krishna also says that in Bhagavad Gita, that for one who constantly worships me with love, I give that person the understanding by which they can come to me. Yes. And from within their heart, with the torchlight of knowledge, I destroy the darkness of ignorance, the Lord says. So, if we come with this little bit of faith to the Lord, to the lotus feet of the Lord, and hear from the pure devotee, then it's not exactly a comprehensible process that goes on, because Krishna is sitting in our hearts, and it's from him as super soul that knowledge comes. And with that knowledge, we become detached from this material world and attached to Krishna. So this is the mercy of the Lord acting from within us. We can simply pray for that mercy and know that this is the process by which we attain actual knowledge. This knowledge, material knowledge, will just keep us infatuated with the material world. And perhaps in some cases, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, material knowledge can be very detrimental because it can make us lose faith in this transcendental knowledge. But transcendental knowledge, as described in Bhagavad Gita, it begins, the very beginning is humility. And then there's a process. Prabhupada says it's like a ladder. It starts with humility, pridelessness, tolerance, nonviolence, and it goes all the way up to a philosophical understanding of the absolute truth. And in that process, what's most essential is constant and unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of God. And how does that happen? By accepting the lotus feet of the spiritual master. That's what we sing every morning, not only at Mangal Arati, Samsara Dava Navadita Loka, that we're burning in this forest fire of material life, and the spiritual master comes like a rain cloud and pours water on that forest fire to extinguish it. And also we sing the prayers later on, the prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says, Yahara Prasadi Bhai, E Baba Toriya Yai. By the mercy of the spiritual master, Bhai means brothers, it's not translated, but he's saying, oh brothers and sisters. By the mercy of the spiritual master, E Baba Toriya Yai, we can cross over this material existence. So that is the mercy that we hanker for and try to become worthy of attaining.
I'm always wondering the limit between knowledge in Bhakti Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Can you explain to me both?
That Krishna says that he is Bhakta Vatsala, he's the friend of the Bhakta. He never says he's Jnana Vatsala, mm-hmm. The friend of the Jnani. So we want to have the Bhakti to make Krishna merciful upon us. And again, will not help per se. Another analogy, for the morning of analogies, Prabhupada gives the example of the parrot. Some parrots, they can talk, you know, so you can teach the parrot to say, the parrot can recite all that, but when the cat comes, the parrot goes, ah! So knowledge is not enough. You must have faith. Right? So when the cat comes, the cat of death comes, we call Krishna, Krishna. Thank you so much for your attention. All glories to Shri Krishna.